steep, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the
spring
first
has definitely sprung here in Austin, Texas. Welcome to the Grill Room Golf Show and Podcast. I'm Bob Bupka, here with your buddy, my buddy, everybody's buddy, Jay Randolph Jr., better known on Twitter as STL Golf Geek. Jay, an unusual week on the PGA Tour. Match play, not stroke play.
Bob, I think you and I both love match play. It should be a fun week. I'm looking forward to seeing Austin Country Club where you are. It follows up a great week last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and we're just moving towards Augusta.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened at that Arnold Palmer Invitational. It looked like a two-horse race right down to the end between Kisner and Leishman. Charlie Hoffman had a good run at it, but then made some bogeys early on his fourth and final round. But quite a story with Mark Leishman. His wife Audrey nearly died in 2015, as you know, Jay. And he actually said at that time, had she passed away, he wasn't going to play golf anymore. He's going to raise his two sons. And now she's healthy again and pregnant. They have a little girl due in July. It was quite funny, Jay, when his son kept asking his dad, when are we going to get that trophy? When are we going to get that trophy? Well, he got the trophy, and he got a lot more with it. What did he get, three-year exemption?
Three-year exemption, and the other beautiful part of it, as you mentioned, Bob, with the family situation is, and there was still golf left, but it was so emotional for his wife and those kids that they basically ran onto the 18th green as if the tournament was over. There was still a little golf action left, but that's how that's how impressive this is and how emotional it was for them. And we've seen so many great moments around that 18th hole, and with the old celebration of Arnie putting on the coat, it was really a great way to end what was a tremendous week and a week that honored Arnold and also saw some great play. You mentioned Hoffman. You know, leading into the final day, Bob, Charlie Hoffman had played the last three at Bay Hill in 6-under par. He finished birdie on Saturday, and he was hoping to take that momentum into Sunday. He didn't have the start he wanted. Rory had a very interesting front nine, a lot of birdies. I think 5 birdies through 10 holes. Just wasn't able to kind of catch up, but good signs from Rory. But congratulations to the Aussie on his second victory and a solid win.
Let's listen to Mark Leishman as he tells us what an unbelievable week it was for him.
Yeah, you know, it's a huge honor to win this event. Especially that on a year when we're honoring such a great man, and the first year after his passing, and it's sad not to have him up there walking off the 18th green, to be that first guy to walk off and not be greeted by Arnold Palmer, but he's left such a great legacy, and I'm sure he'd be proud of how everything's gone this week. The course was unbelievable. Crowds were amazing. Weather was perfect. It's been an unbelievable week for me.
Yeah, Bob, I think when you look at the four majors, they kind of stand alone. You're at a World Golf Championship event this week. They stand alone. But also those events that are in honor of the greats of the game. Like you got at Muirfield, like you got at the Nelson, like you have at Colonial with Hogan, and certainly here with the King in the first year without him. That'll be one Mark Leishman relishes and probably appreciates it just as much as anything but a major championship.
Yeah, and a lot of players really made it special, and they had the Palmer umbrella on their shoes, clubs, bags, hats. Matter of fact, the R&A did a nice thing. They asked Henrik Stenson to bring the claret jug to be displayed because Arnie won it twice, actually put the British Open on its back and got it back to where it was. So the King of Golf was remembered well. And you and I, people that knew Arnold Palmer and knew what he has done for the game, and I guarantee you a lot of the people that play Normandy, that public golf course that you're put your name to, wouldn't be playing if it wasn't for Arnold Palmer.
Absolutely, Bob. And I try and tell the young people, and I know you do too, about the significance of the King, and it's weeks like last week, and it's going to be an annual tradition, if you will. This man has not left the game. He may have left the planet, but he'll never leave the game. And his impact on this game will continue, not only with the naming of the tournament there at his playground at Bay Hill Club and Lodge, which I was very surprised the first couple of days how low the scoring was. But that wind kicked up a little bit in the final round and changed everything. But some classy moves. And I think, like I said, every year, Bob, this is going to be fun because the memories of Arnold and at a great venue like Bay Hill.
Yeah, and the good thing about it, as far the time passes, you know, the stories always get better. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, let's take a quick look at the PGA Tour champions, Tucson Conquistadors Classic. And guess who wins his 10th PGA Tour champions victory, first since 2015. Good friend of mine and just an all-round good guy by the name of Tom Lehman.
Yep, Tom Lehman, nice to see. It's hard to believe he's hit double digits. I mean, you know, he's had success, but 10 victories on that PGA Tour Champions with the likes of the players that are out there is pretty significant in just a couple of years, but it's first since 2015. And he spent the offseason, Bob, really trying to work on getting in shape, and it worked out well in Tucson. It's great to see the Conquistadors involved with that event after so many years as a part of the PGA Tour. And, you know, proven that you can get to 52, 53, 54 and still be competitive out there. And I'll never forget Tom Lehman when he was the Ryder Cup captain. That year he got the opportunity to go meet, during the week of the L.A. Open, the Wizard of Westwood, Coach Wooden. And he talked about the lessons he learned from Coach Wooden out at UCLA that week, an elderly Coach Wooden. Tom is a great man of faith, and nice to see him get the W. As you know, the Grill Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in the military, both at home and around the world, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now let's move to the WGC Dell Match Play. We'll get to the odds for both the Match Play and the Masters a little later on in the show. All right, we're at the Austin Country Club. Boy, I can remember back, God, I don't even want to say how many years, but being able to come here, going on the range that we're sitting right above now, and getting lessons from Harvey Pienick himself, it was a thrill that I never forget. He was regarded as maybe the best teacher ever in the history of golf. Going to a very special function tonight with Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite, and I'm actually bringing Tinsley Pienick, wow, who's Harvey's son, to the affair. Looking forward to that. But all the big players are here. This is a perfect course for this event. It's kind of a match play golf course is the only way that I can describe it. And you know, it's going to take a lot of good play to see who comes out on top in the Dell Technologies Match Play. That's right, they put that Technologies in there. We want to make sure we give them proper credit. Players, Jay, from 20 different countries.
Just says where we're at today in the game, that it's a worldwide game. You saw Tyrrell Hatton from England up there on the leaderboard last week. Leishman, your winner. I mean, it's totally changing. And, of course, if you don't know, each player plays in a group, plays a round robin against the three other guys for the first 3 days, and then they move into the main bracket, and it plays out from match play until then. Dustin Johnson has won all four World Golf Championships, except this one, Bob. One you'd think he might have won with his propensity to make birdies in a match play format.
Well, certainly, I can tell you one thing firsthand. When Dustin Johnson walks on this range that I referred to just a minute ago, the number of players that gather standing behind him increases on a daily basis. everybody wants to see how this guy is hitting this golf ball as straight and as far as he is. And boy, it doesn't take much to really recognize, sheer brilliance. And I've been saying what I'm watching with Dustin Johnson is an athlete who's playing golf. I mean, he's the most athletic-looking guy on the range, and that's saying some, because there's some other guys, too, that are very athletic, but none seem to have the athletic ability of Dustin Johnson.
No, I think you are dead on there, and maybe the most athletic golfer we've ever had. I mean, there's stories about him shooting the rock and dunking and all kinds of stuff. And we've talked the last couple of months about maybe the influence of his father-in-law, Wayne Gretzky, on his mindset and on his demeanor. And you said it, Bob, the way he's hitting that driver. I mean, when you can hit it that far and have that type of confidence, you can win every week, and it'll be interesting to see how he does this week in his bracket. Some of the key opening round matches, you've got number 2 seed Rory McIlroy against Søren Jelsen from Denmark, Paul Casey, who showed a little good form at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, taking on Joost Luiten from Holland, and Jordan Spieth has got two Japanese players in his group, along with former U.S. amateur champion Ryan Moore.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough group there for Jordan Spieth. The Japanese players, they really don't even know that much about Jordan Spieth, so they're not going to be intimidated. They go out there and get a hot hand. We'll have to wait and see. Interesting first match also, Hideki Matsuyama is going against Jim Furyk. And talking to Fluff just a little while ago down on the range, and I said to Jimmy, I said, boy, you got a big edge. I said, nobody knows golf strategy any better than Fluff Cowan, who's been a longtime caddy for Jim Furyk, actually, before that Tiger Woods, before that Peter Jacobson. So Fluff's been out here a while.
Yeah, Fluff owes me about 2 packs of cigarettes, too, by the way. He used to bum. He never would just bum 1 cigarette. He'd say, yeah, give me 2 or 3. But he is grand. That's an interesting matchup there, because Jim Furyk's not going to play just to play, even in his Ryder Cup captaincy situation. I mean, when Jim Furyk puts the peg in the ground, he's trying to win. Also, a very interesting bracket with Thomas Peters, who we've been talking a lot more about. Scott Piercy, also in that group, Bubba and Johnny Vegas. That could be a very wild group to pay attention to. Louis Oosthuizen, who Bob saw on the range, taking on England's Ross Fisher. And last year, Louis was a finalist at the match play.
Yeah, he was, and he was working with the PXG people, and they asked Louis to hit a 4-iron for them, so he hit 3 4-irons, and then Louis said to the PXG people, how far did that last one go? And they said that ball carried 240 yards. Carried 240 yards. I mean, I said, you're kidding me. And they actually let me look at the track man, and there it was in black and white. Pretty good match is going to be between Patrick Reed and Jason Duffner. That should be very interesting.
I love that pairing. I love that matchup because, you know, Duffner is one of those guys that's kind of a streaky guy. He gets hot for a couple weeks. Patrick Reed can get hot on any day, and when I say get hot, he can also get upset. If he's not got it going well and Jason Duffner gets a little lead, Patrick Reed can get a little fire. I'm looking forward to that one. And speaking of hot, Kevin Kisner, who almost won last week, Tommy Fleetwood, Zach Johnson, and Brooks Koepka are all in the same bracket. And Zach Johnson is no stranger to match play. You got Kisner firing on all cylinders. Koepka, a good player. And let me tell you something. I've been saying it for a while. Don't sleep on Tommy Fleetwood. What a final round at Bay Hill he had.
He really did. And on Talk Sport over in the UK, I was just on a show and I touted Tommy Fleetwood in his opening match versus Zach Johnson, because when I was on the range yesterday, I went to shake Zach Johnson's hand, and instead I got five knuckles. And he said, Bob, don't take anything from that. But he says, I'm sick as a dog, so I don't want to shake your hand. I'll give you a knuckle. So I had a knuckle shake with Zach Johnson, but he's not feeling well. So, you know, it's like a horse that...
Beware of the wounded...
Right. So Tommy Fleetwood might be worth a good wager tomorrow.
Absolutely. Our man Darren Walker, who listens to us every week, might be on that match tomorrow. It's been a big week for South Carolina as the South Carolina Gamecocks, my alma mater, make it to the Sweet 16 for the first time in the NCAA tournament. And two guys from the Palmetto State, Dustin Johnson, the number one seed, and former U.S. Open champion Webb Simpson, will be taking on each other. Jimmy Walker, hard to believe that, you know, this guy, Jimmy Walker, it might not be the favorite against Martin Keimer of Germany, and also in that group, as we mentioned, is Dustin Johnson and Webb Simpson. So that's a powerful group. And then some young guns. You got Justin Thomas taking on England's Chris Wood, and then another young gun from England, Matthew Fitzpatrick, who played well at Bay Hill, taking on Kevin Na. Phil Mickelson, Bob, playing this week. He's going to take on Siwoo Kim in the first match. Also in that bracket or grouping is J.B. Holmes and Daniel Berger.
Yeah, it looks like pretty good for Phil Mickelson to get out of that group if he plays well. Another group that I'm going to keep an eye on, Jason Day, in his opening match against Pat Perez. Pat Perez is a real bulldog. He's not going to go down easy. And also in Day's group is last week's winner, Mark Leishman, and Lee Westwood, who really loves match play. So that group with Day in there is going to be pretty interesting. What about Tyrrell Hatton from England, who's been playing exceptional golf? He's going up against Charles Howell III, and had a long talk with him, and every time I see him, I always say, I want to see you at Augusta, because he was born and raised in Augusta. And he said, Bob, nobody wants to play in that Masters any more than I do. And sometimes you kind of refrain from saying it to him because he's heard it so much.
Yeah, he certainly has. And he played well earlier this year at Riviera. And, you know, Charles Howell III had so much hype coming out, and has had a very successful PGA Tour career, but you can argue not the type of career that many expected, thought he would be one of the elite players. Sergio Garcia will take on Ireland's Shane Lowry in the opening round, and also in that group is our man Rombo, John Rahm, and Kevin Chappell, and that rounds out the match play. You're listening to The Grew Room, heard on TuneIn, Audio Boom, KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course, Talk Sport 2. Let's take a break, and when we return, we'll talk with Ian Carter, who covers golf and does it well for the BBC. Remember, we want to hear from you. Email us at menu@thegrewroom.com or find us on Twitter at STL Golf Geek and Bob Bubka, B-O-G.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par three as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old school golf at its finest.
Make Coolbrella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Coolbrella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Coolbrella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to Coolbrella.com. That's K-O-O-L-B-R-E-L-L-A.com. Coolbrella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready.
Okay, let's switch gears here in the Grill Room, Jay, and bring in somebody that I've had the pleasure of working alongside of for many, many years. His name is Ian Carter, one of the most recognizable personalities in the world of golf, covering golf, does an outstanding job for the BBC. So let me welcome Ian. Thanks for joining, Jay and I. We appreciate your time.
Bob, Jay, great to see you, and thank you. Very, very kind comments and completely unwarranted.
I don't think so. Hey, let's get right to something that I want to get information on. I know Jay does too. Danny Willett wins the Masters last year. How big a deal was that back in England? Obviously the first Englishman to win since Nick Faldo, but how big a deal was it in England, Ian?
Oh, I think at the time it was a really big deal. As you say, first British winner since Sir Nick Faldo back in 1996. And the Masters, you know, still resonates as much as it ever did in the United Kingdom. And I think, you know, a lot of people had been waiting for Rory McIlroy to don a green jacket in particular. And then, lo and behold, Danny Willett comes along and genuinely went out and won that Masters. I really think that was the perception in the UK, because you know, a lot of people will look at and say, well, Jordan Spieth threw it away, obviously, with what happened on the 12th. But I think the way that it was seen back home was that an opportunity presented itself, and the way that Willett played those closing three holes when he suddenly found himself at the top of the leaderboard was worthy of any winner. So yes, it was a big deal, Bob.
Well, and a lot of responsibility comes with that. And my question for you, Ian, is as he's gone through this year, a lot of obligations, a lot of different things, how do you think his game is shaping up as we move towards Augusta?
Well, I'm afraid, Jay, I don't think it's shaping up particularly well. And I think, you know, if you sort of go back 12 months, you were seeing Danny Willett really making big progress in the world of golf, challenging at the WGC event at Doral, having a string of high finishes, winning in Dubai. So in that respect, it wasn't a surprise to see him contend at the Masters. Yes, it was a surprise to see him win, because obviously it was a first-time major victory. But the fact that he contended was no surprise at all. I think it would be this time around. He's struggled, I think, with the, as you say, the responsibilities that go with being a major champion. You know, being in that spotlight, there is a big adjustment to be made. And as he says himself, there's one, that adjustment, the fact that you have so much more media to deal with at tournaments and all that sort of thing. But of course, it also coincided with him becoming a father for the first time as well. So his whole life has changed in the last 12 months. So I think it has been a struggle. There's very little in the form line to suggest that he is going to be a contender this time around. Whereas, as I say, 12 months ago, it was very much the case that he was one of the best players in the world and due to contend.
You know, Ian, you brought up a great point. So much attention has been paid to what Jordan Spieth did And not enough credit, I don't think, to Danny Willett. I mean, he shot 67 on Sunday when he had an opportunity to win. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff for anybody to do. And then you throw in that he's seeking his first major, and the first major is going to be the Masters, and yet his talent prevailed enough for him to shoot 67.
Absolutely, and it was bogey-free. He knew that he had to go low to have any chance. He was in that sort of chasing pack going into the final round. And really what happened on the 15th, as he left the green there, and he looked up at the leaderboard, and that was the moment that the Spieth meltdown on the 12th was reflected on that leaderboard. And do you know the first thing he did, Bob? He went to the toilet. There was a porter cabin there behind the 16th tee, and he went off there. And while he was in there, he just had a word with himself and said, right, it's five decent swings. That's what I've got to come up with, and that may well be enough to do this. And, of course, he hit a wonderful tee shot into 16. He made a superb putt for birdie there. And then on 17, the up and down was exemplary. Got himself home, came up with those five good swings as he'd said to himself and had said to his caddy. And then he could just sit back and watch it all unfold. And there were chances for Spieth in those closing holes, but he wasn't able to take them. And that's why Willett was the man who went away with a green jacket.
Well, I want to ask you about a young man who is really coming into form, a signature victory early this year in Abu Dhabi, Tommy Fleetwood. What a round he had on Sunday at Bay Hill, and it just seems like this young man keeps getting better and better. Tell us a little bit more about the man from Southport.
And you know what, Jay? You know, for Danny Willett 12 months ago, you could perhaps read Tommy Fleetwood this time around, because that was a huge breakthrough in Abu Dhabi. He'd had a horrible year last year, went back to his old coach, suddenly started to find things and just moved away from this notion that he felt he had to change his swing to become a top 10 player, and that patently wouldn't work, and as a result he dropped outside the world's top 100, really tumbled down the rankings, went back to basics, went back to the way that he likes to play, and has been reaping the dividends ever since. So he now finds himself, you know, comfortably in the world's top 50. He's looking forward to his Masters debut in a couple of weeks' time, and will go there with huge confidence. Now, I think it's asking an awful lot on debut to contend, never mind win your first major. But he is someone who is brimful of confidence. He's a really, really engaging guy as well. If his golf hadn't been quite so good, he'd have probably taken up a career in acting. He loved drama at school and got fantastic grades at that, but the golf was too good. Had a stellar amateur career, played Walker Cup, came through, and really has made mark now in the professional ranks.
See, that's the kind of stuff you learn in the Grill Room. You don't hear it anywhere else. Thanks to Ian Carter, we learned that Tommy Fleetwood wanted to be an actor if he wasn't a professional golfer, and that Danny Willett used a porta potty to help him get a green jacket. Wow, that's interesting. All right, Ian Carter, before we let you go, and we certainly appreciate your time, Rory McIlroy, going to be going down to Augusta, going to be trying to complete that Grand Slam. Your take on McIlroy's chances?
Well, I think they have been damaged by the injury that he picked up at the start of the year. He'd prescribed it for himself a really, really busy start to the year. He wanted to come into Augusta razor sharp and having played a string of tournaments. And, of course, that didn't happen as a result of the rib injury. Certainly what happened at Bay Hill, particularly over the weekend, will have been very, very encouraging for him. Defeat in his opening match in the group stages of the match play is hardly ideal. That's taken his fate out of his own hands, and so the big question will he turn up at Augusta undergolfed? And that was very much the one thing that he didn't want ahead of the Masters. So we'll have to wait and see. He certainly, as we've said many, many times, Bob, haven't we, that he's got the game for Augusta. We know that, and it would be very, very strange indeed were he to go his career without winning the Masters. But as he's acknowledged many, many times, you know, each year that passes without him winning makes it harder and harder for him to achieve that goal of completing the career Grand Slam. So I do sense with him that, you know, and he makes no bones about it, the Masters is the biggest deal for him of the entire golfing year. And I just wonder whether that's going to hinder him or inspire him when we get to Augusta in a couple of weeks' time.
Ian, before we let you go, I want to ask you about one other guy, Tyrrell Hatton, who we're starting to learn more about. Tell us a little bit more about him, because he's showing really good form.
Okay, repeat after me. Tyrrell. Not Tyrrell. Tyrrell.
Tyrrell.
Tyrrell.
Tyrrell.
That's the way. Now, that's how he says his name. He's a super lad. And my goodness me, look at the results that he is very, very quietly putting together. And he's now climbed up to, what, number 14 in the world. He won the Dunhill Links Championship at St Andrews at the end of last year, but he has a string of really impressive results. You could take it back to the Open Championship, tied for fifth there, a high finish at the PGA Championship as well. He's someone who wears his heart on his sleeve on the golf course. He struggles to contain his emotions when things go against him. But if you sit down and have a meal with him, or, as I was lucky enough to do in the Middle East earlier in the year, or go and sit with him at his golf club, as again I managed to do just after the Dubai Desert Classic, you could not ask to meet a nicer lad. And for me, it's fantastic to see the progress that he's making. He keeps the game extremely simple. He doesn't get waylaid by too much technical thought. He's coached by his dad, who's a qualified teaching professional and a club maker. And the amazing thing is he only has two swing thoughts. One is at around about a quarter of the way back on his swing. The other is at the top of his backswing. And then he swings away and he keeps it extremely simple. He doesn't even know whether he's going to draw or fade the ball. He just knows the target that he wants to hit. And my goodness me, the way he's been playing recently, he's been hitting that target with tremendous regularity.
Well, the question I'd like to know, Jay, is I wonder who picked up the tab for that lunch when Ian Carter sat down. Anyway, hey, thanks, Ian. It's always a pleasure to have you in the grow room. And
I tell you what, Bob, Jay, it wasn't me that picked up the tab, unlike well, whenever I'm in the grill room with you.
Very nice.
Thanks again, Ian, for joining us. We really appreciate it. All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be in the newsroom.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old school golf at its finest.
Make Cool Brella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Cool Brella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Cool Brella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to coolbrella.com. That's K-O-O-L-B-R-E-L-L-A.com. Cool Brella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready.
All right, Jay, let's take a little time in The Grill Room here to talk about some of the stuff that has showed up on our newsroom desk. First news out of Augusta. News that the par 3 contest has become so popular that now they have to put limits on the people that participate. I know a good friend of yours, probably from St. Louis, a little disappointed in this news.
Yeah, my man Jim Holtgreave, who has played in four Masters tournaments as an amateur, and there are other people I know out there that get invited back to kind of be there for the week and be recognized for what they've done in the game, and they always played in the par three contest. But, Bob, you and I both know that thing's become a big deal. And, you know, the past champions and the Masters field are the only ones now that are going to get to play. So, because, you know, it used to be, well, maybe I'll play this year. Maybe I won't. Now these guys all want to play.
Yeah. All of a sudden, when they can't play, they want to play. But I think they've done certainly have done the right thing. All right, let's talk a little bit about Tiger. Just got off the phone just a few minutes ago, Jay, with somebody that was at the New York book signing. Tiger Woods showed up in the middle of Manhattan. Can you believe it? It's hard to visualize Tiger Woods in the middle of Manhattan, but also very difficult to visualize because the report I got was that he was chatting it up. He was smiling. He was mingling with the people that got in line, and some people almost waited in line 24 hours to guarantee getting an autograph from Tiger. But as you know Tiger very well, and I do too, Jay, when I see that he's all happy and you know, mingling with the crowd, that's the furthest thing from a competitive Tiger that I could ever see. So to me, that's a pretty good indication that we're not going to see Tiger show up at the Masters with a miracle recovery.
I think that's a great read, Bob. I think that if he was focused on preparation to get ready and play in the Masters, I don't know that he would be as jovial as he seemed to be there. I would love to see some finality to it. I understand that with injury you don't know, but we do wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, he could surprise us.
Yep.
You know, it wouldn't be the first time, and we'll have to wait and see. How about the good news coming out of Japan, the Tokyo Golf Club that is set to host the Olympics? They finally voted to admit female members, so that situation is done and dusted. One quick note before we wrap it up, Jay. I've been hearing grumblings here at the match play that the Ryder Cup, scheduled for 2018 in Paris, they're looking for potential alternate sites if that terrorist situation doesn't rectify itself in the country of France. Ryder Cup is a possibility going to be switched. And ironically enough, one site that is receiving a lot of attention is Glen Eagles, where they just held the Ryder Cup. But, you know, so the Glen Eagles knows the drill. And, you know, it would be easy for them to, you know, do another edition of the Ryder Cup. But that's pure speculation at this point. So we'll hold off any further development. You'll hear him first right here on the Grill Room.
And, Bob, let's take one more look at the news and notes with our pre-Masters odds. Each week we're going to update the odds on the Masters. Presently the favorite is Jordan Spieth, who had the trouble last year at Augusta. Second choice is Dustin Johnson at 7-1, Rory McIlroy at 8-1, and then Jason Day at 12-1. Bob, those are the four favorites right now.
Yeah, and it seems like a little bit of an overlay, Jay, on Bubba Watson. He's got two green jackets, and he's listed as 30-1. I know he hadn't been playing well and all that stuff, but, you know, it seems to be a different Bubba Watson when we get down Magnolia Lane. He knows how to play down there, and Adam Scott's in the same boat, Jay, 30-1. Henrik Stenson, golly, he won the Open Championship last year. He's at 25-1. Phil Mickelson, I don't know, 20-1, probably a good value bet there.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with two guys in Mickelson and Bubba Watson, who it almost doesn't really matter what form they've been on. They've shown that week at Augusta, they can be right and they can win the Masters tournament. Also, we should mention Hideki Matsuyama is at 15-1. So each week we'll update you on the odds at Augusta as we get ever closer to the playing of the Masters tournament.
Well, there you have it. As Jay promised, we will update you. The Masters immediately on the horizon.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.